This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The nation's first undergraduate human rights studies program began at the University of Dayton in 1998. In 2013, UD opened its Human Rights Center. Camilo Perez Bustillo recently became the first executive director of the center. He's a former advisor to the United Nations and coordinator of a project on human rights along the U.S.-Mexico border. Executive Director Perez Bustillo joins us to discuss creating positive change worldwide through human rights issues research, education, and dialogue. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Camilo, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you. It's really a pleasure.
Tell me about the mission of the Human Rights Center.
You know, since we're based at University of Dayton, and that's a very important context for us, we're kind of at the crossroads of the kind of human rights work that's done around the world, pulling together basically four strands. Education, because we're at a university and we're very much committed to infusing throughout undergraduate education and graduate education in Dayton and throughout the U.S., the concepts of human rights and human rights as a discipline that students can engage with while they're students and look to later for their careers. Research, basically scholarship around human rights, making sure that there's good work, good research that's published and that's disseminated, that gets the ideas out about human rights into the world so that people can engage with it. Dialogue, which is absolutely critical. Of course, because we're a Catholic university at UD, this concept of Catholic social teaching and sort of Catholic social doctrine, sort of the ways in which faith-based communities can engage with human rights as well. And the other is advocacy, which means being on the cutting edge as much as we can in terms of intervening in the real world and not just having, you know, beautiful words on paper, you know, the kind of poetry you get in UN documents and so on, but having things that people can kind of sink their teeth into and that make a difference in real people's lives.
Yeah, on the front of your brochure, it says working at the frontiers of research and advocacy. So you're talking about this convergence where research and advocacy touch each other. So what is the importance of research to human rights advocates? How can research make a difference in enhancing human rights?
I think it's really critical. You know, I come to this as a human rights lawyer and scholar. So I've been in the field, you know, like actually litigating human rights cases. And what has traditionally been described in the U.S. as civil rights cases. I started as a civil rights lawyer. Civil rights is simply like the U.S. version, the domestic version of what we refer to as human rights, which are the international standards, which the U.S., like other countries, have committed themselves to implement. So when you're doing that kind of work, when you're bringing a case on behalf of a specific group of people, victims of human rights violations, you need good data. Good information. You need to ground that case in research, in expertise, and that's where we try to come in as a university-based human rights center to connect those two worlds, the world of advocacy, the world of research and scholarship, and make that a more powerful package to make a difference in the lives, as we describe it, of the poor and the persecuted. That's our mission. That's our commitment.
So what have been some of the successes the center has had so far?
I think one that's really important that we're working on currently, we're in the process of developing a report about issues related to contemporary forms of slavery, which is, I think, hard to believe if we think about, you know, we're in the 21st century.
And human trafficking still exists.
You've got it.
Yeah.
Exactly. And in this case, it's in Brazil, but that's simply a microcosm of broader issues. And we know here in Ohio, we have an organization that has been working very closely with the Human Rights Center for years and is, in fact, one of the founding areas of work of the Human Rights Center, which is called Abolition Ohio, which focuses on human trafficking in Ohio and its effects. So we might be working in a place that sounds remote, Brazil, around these issues, but we're trying to connect them to issues right here at home throughout Ohio and what happens in terms of migrants coming to Ohio, immigrants, and being entangled in these webs of exploitation, including child trafficking, sex trafficking. So Abolition Ohio, our colleague Anthony Talbot, works at the center on these issues, is the co-chair of Abolition Ohio, and we try to make sure that our work is connected on the ground to complying with Ohio law and federal law and international law in these issues, but also doing education. That's sort of the education and outreach piece, so that we connect to communities that are affected by these issues or that might not even be aware that where they live, such trafficking and such even ultimately slavery exists.
Why do you think people aren't more aware about it? I mean, it's such a shocking issue in the first place. Mm. Why do you think people don't quite grasp the gravity of this?
I think it's also a way in which we've become more and more desensitized, I think, as communities. I mean, again, I'm new to Ohio, so I mean, I'm not judging anybody. But I mean, I can just say I came from New Mexico. I grew up in New York. I know the places where I grew up, the places I worked recently in the U.S. and teaching. What I found is students, young people, more and more distant from all of this. I mean, ironically, with all of the ways in which young people are connected now through social media, somehow I feel that they're disconnected from the places where they live and the places where their communities could thrive, and that there's a disconnect between that incredible world that's opened up through social media and the kinds of information that would like ground you in your surroundings. And that somehow our task as educators is to make that connection as well.
Okay, so one of the areas you feel like you've had some success and some impact is in this area of modern-day slavery, human trafficking. What are some of the other successes the center has had?
I think another very important piece is the undergraduate program, which was one of the first in the country, the Human Rights Studies program, started in 1998. So we have almost 20 years of experience with undergraduate education. You can get a BA in Human Rights Studies through the Political Science Department at UD, and we definitely want to attract the broadest, most diverse group of students possible to that. And we want to create a cohort. That's what we've been building on the last 20 years, a cohort of students engaged with human rights from the moment of their undergraduate education all the way out into their intervention in the world, and to create sort of pathways for them to work in human rights, to connect them to human rights organizations and institutions in the U.S. and internationally.
So that's what you think it's going to take to have an impact on human rights issues, is to get more and more people involved?
I think definitely, and I would say it basically has to be from the ground up. I think there's been a tendency, you know, you kind of look to the UN, you know, it's like fancy buildings. I mean, it's kind of out there somewhere, or Geneva. Well, it's here in Ohio. It's here on the ground. Obviously, I think the Black Lives Matter movement and what's arisen around that, Ferguson for sure, which is very close to us, and the ripples from that. We were just in Baltimore last week, Freddie Gray. I mean, we know the names, right? All of that has created an awareness among young people that human rights can be translated into the conditions in which you live at home, but that they have to engage with those conditions. And it's students of whatever background. I mean, specifically, of course, around police violence. We're talking about youth of color being affected disproportionately. But it's students of any background whose rights can be violated and who need to be aware, knowledgeable, and conscious about their rights.
So how much collaboration will the center be doing with the Human Rights Studies program at UD?
Oh, it's a very close relationship. We're an integral part of, I would say, the human rights community at UD. And so one expression of that is the Human Rights Studies program. Another is the Human Rights Center. And they're completely intertwined. The staff of the Human Rights Studies program, its director, Natalie Hudson, is a member of the Human Rights Center, and vice versa. So we're going to be going back and forth within UD, but beyond. Among these axes of research, of education, of advocacy, and of scholarship.
So what's your vision for the center? Where would you like to see it head in the future?
We want to position the center as a global leader in these issues. We want to make the center visible among all of the networks working on human rights within the U.S. and beyond. And specifically, we want to connect this work that's being done on the ground in the U.S. and outside the U.S. that's contributing to enriching how we understand human rights. There's always a question. It's like, what do we mean by human rights? I mean, how do we translate that?
That's a great question, too. I mean, you hear the word thrown around a lot, human rights.
Right.
What exactly are we talking about?
Especially from our perspective of, you know, Catholic social teaching and as a Catholic institution. But, of course, that doesn't exclude anybody. But it's simply, you know, it's a relevant part of our context and our origins and where we're headed in terms of our values. What we're talking about is rights that are inherent to being a human being. That's really the bottom line. It's that these are rights that no government can give or take away. These are rights that you have, that you're endowed with, simply because you're a person. and that you have that right to dignity, to respect, and to your rights being honored, which means kind of honoring you as a human being. So when we see, for example, the terrible violence in Orlando, you know, just a couple of weeks ago, mm-hmm. when we see the ways in which certain groups are targeted for being identified in a certain way, I mean, who knows who was dancing at the club at that hour when the firing began and what their sexual preference was, but the place was targeted because it was identified with LGBT people. But it was also full of people from Puerto Rico, right, and Latinos. It was Latino night at the Pulse Club, which happened to have an LGBT kind of brand, but also Latino. Who knows who was actually killed in terms of whether they fit into those categories or not, or how they understood themselves, but they were targeted because of that. And that to us is an offense to the fundamental dignity of the human person. It's not about whether we agree or disagree or sympathize or not with a particular lifestyle or a sexual preference. It's about respecting human beings for who they are. When we hear in the presidential campaign the calls for a Muslim ban in terms of immigration, when we hear calls in the campaign for building a wall and making it higher and higher, you know, we all know what we're referring to. When we hear that kind of intolerance promoted and responses to Orlando that are like, see, I told you so, this is what was going to happen if you bring these people, that's an offense to all of us as human beings.
So, Camilo, how does economics play into human rights? People with no money have no power. Is that sort of a universal truth, no matter the race, the gender, the ethnicity, or the faith of a person?
Yeah, I would say basically our lodestone, kind of our center of gravity, is to stand with the people who are powerless, who are marginalized, who are excluded, who are oppressed or discriminated in some way. And when you add that all up all together, that's kind of the 99% that people talk about sometimes, you know, like, you know, the Occupy movement and so on. I mean, that moment, you know, 2008, 2009, the Arab Spring, I mean, those are the sectors we're talking about. Those on the outside, not on the inside. Now, ironically, a lot of the presidential campaign on both sides, right, Trump and Sanders, has been kind of appealing to those constituencies from slightly different perspectives and sometimes convergent. You know, the critique of free trade and its impact. What's happened in Ohio in terms of jobs? What's happened in Ohio in terms of the economy? Who's on the outside now? How hard is it to make a dignified life in Ohio today? For us, that's a human rights issue in Ohio and throughout the world.
We will continue our conversation, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guest this afternoon is Camilo Perez Bustillo, Executive Director of the University of Dayton Human Rights Center, and he joins us to discuss creating positive change worldwide through human rights issues, research, education, and dialogue. You can be part of the conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can join us on Facebook or Twitter. Camilo, in these days where it's tough to get people to agree on much of anything, how do you get part of your mission here is to foster dialogue. How do you get a dialogue going about human rights?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely a critical issue. I mean, I think we have to somehow create spaces where we can begin to listen to each other again, to hear each other, and to dialogue. And so that's going to be a very important part. It has been and will be a very important part of our work at the Human Rights Center. One way we frame it is what we call North-South dialogue, which is thinking about the global North and the global South. It's kind of like, you know, the 1% and the 99%, but projected out over the world. Who's vulnerable in the world? And so it's the poorer countries and the richer countries. Now, of course, within the U.S., we've got both. We've got communities that are, you know, hurting, that are losing ground, and we've got wealth more and more concentrated in the U.S. We need dialogue about those issues within the U.S. and beyond. And so we're going to be doing a lot of that, of connecting these issues in the U.S. and in Latin America. That's where some of my background comes in. I mean, so what I'm trying to bring to the center is, you know, I've lived in Latin America most of the last 25 years in Mexico, and then on the U.S.-Mexico border, you know, documenting human rights violations. And I'm trying to bring sort of that expertise and experience from what we call the South to the North and vice versa. And to say basically we have a lot to learn from each other. And that what we don't want to do is that assume that anybody has the answer, but that the answer can only come through dialogue and through engagement.
Now, I know you haven't been at UD long enough to comment about UD students. You've been here, what, a week?
On the job, a week. Well,
and here you're exactly. talking with us within a week.
Right.
But I just wonder what your thoughts are about the under 30 generation and its perspective on human rights.
You know, I'm very inspired by what I've seen of youth. When I refer to, for example, the upsurge around Black Lives Matter, I mean, to me, that's like a very positive indicator of our youth being in movement and becoming conscious about the injustices that surround them and engaging with them. So I'm very sympathetic to that, and we're trying to do a project right now in Ferguson that's called the Moral Courage Project through Professor Joel Proust, who's one of the research associates of the Human Rights Center. And he just came from a three-week immersion experience for students in Ferguson. But we also do that in Malawi, in Africa, in Central Africa. We also do that in Brazil through the slave labor project that I mentioned before. So we're trying to connect those pieces. What does Malawi, Brazil, Ferguson, what do they have in common? And how can we dialogue around that? And how can we engage young people with that? But our priority is education with young people within the university and beyond. We want to make sure that we're connected to what's going on in the communities around UD, in Dayton, in Cincinnati, in Columbus, throughout the region, throughout the state, in Cleveland, and look at how we can learn from those experiences. Up in Toledo, there's the Farm Labor Organizing Committee, for example, for a long time, working around the Campbell workers and so on. I mean, we want to connect to those issues. Those are Mexican migrant workers. And also, as I mentioned, Abolition Ohio, Professor Talbot.
We talked about human trafficking earlier.
Yes.
So human trafficking obviously is one of the most pressing human rights issues that we face. What are some of the other issues that present a challenge?
I think in general, immigrant rights, what we refer to as migrants in the international context, but immigrant rights, the issue of migrant children, unaccompanied children, that huge influx that there was at the U.S.-Mexico border in the spring of 2014, which is an influx that continues but has kind of lost media coverage recently. There's also a major effort underway that we're engaged with at the Human Rights Center and at the Hanley Sustainability Institute, where we share offices at the university at Fitz Hall, around what are called the UN Sustainable Development Goals. There's just a study that came out today that we were chatting about before we came on the air, about 70 million children who will be dying during the next year throughout the world because of preventable disease and hunger.
Mm-hmm.
70 million.
That just is astounding, that many.
And I think we were commenting it's on page 6 or whatever. No, I mean, shouldn't this be a headline every day? How many children die of hunger? How many children die of preventable disease? Not just, you know, in Malawi, you know, or in Brazil where we might expect it. But what about here in Ohio? Do we know how many are hungry in Ohio? Do we know what are the ways in which we might be able to address that through public policy? How can we get there without research, without education, without advocacy, without dialogue? So we're trying to put those pieces together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, many of the discussions about rights issues seem to include pointing the blame at particular individuals or particular groups. But that alienates people.
Right.
So instead of encouraging the buy-in, we're alienating them. How do we solve that problem? That goes back to the whole idea of how do you get a dialogue going about this?
It's very tricky. I mean, for example, we have a priority, which is corporate social responsibility. So let's assume, for example, that there are U.S. corporations, you know, whose home is in the U.S., who might be benefiting in some way from slave labor abroad because of the way those products are made. What are those chains of responsibility between what goes on in Brazil, for example, and the product that ends up on the market in the U.S.? And what responsibility do we have? Not just what responsibility does that corporation have, which raises all kinds of ethical and legal issues, potentially. It might mean legal liabilities, among other things. It might mean that, you know, corporations should be smarter and not be engaged in those chains. But it also means we have responsibilities as consumers to look at where our products come from and how they're produced. And that slave labor might be involved, or trafficking might be involved, or other forms of exploitation, forced labor that isn't slavery, but almost. And so I think it means responsibility that combines all of these dimensions. And that means we need reflection and we need engagement.
How do you, at the center, how do you make decisions about what areas to work in, what issues to work in? What's that process?
It's very complex because, of course, there are always limited resources, although, you know, there have been some very generous gestures of support that are very important from the Board of Trustees of UD, from its former president, from its incoming president, et cetera. There's a very high-level commitment at UD to these issues, and that's why we're able to do the work we do. But there's always a need for more resources. And so what we find we have to do is we really have to build on all of these different networks. We have to find ways to infuse what we do with the expertise and experience of others and bring that together in some way. See what we can add and bring to the table to sort of maximize our effectiveness, because you're never going to have enough resources, right? There are always going to be limits. And we're always fighting against sectors that have greater resources, whether it's the government or private business. And so we have to find ways to create partnerships as well so that we can work together to resolve these issues, hopefully in a dignified and humane manner. Now, advocacy is also part of this. And it also means, I mean, it's kind of, you know, there are ways also to pressure, and we have to look at those pressure points, and we have to, you know, bring the voice of people who are excluded to the table in the places where deliberation is undertaken, where decisions are made. You know? So we have to work on that aspect as well.
Yeah, going back to the idea of the supply chain, how a lot of times we don't realize that in the supply chain there are items that were made by people who are enslaved.
That's right.
How does a consumer go about figuring out that whole thing as far as what products are involved in this kind of thing?
You know, there are state laws in places like California that are now being modeled on in proposals for national legislation in D.C., and so we were engaging with some of those issues last week. And so we're looking to support legislative solutions to try and address those questions. So in California, there's a state law that requires essentially a labeling process to trace those supply chains. And we would want that to be reproduced on a national level. And then we have to look at, maybe we need a law in Ohio, right, specifically, to look at how all those pieces fit together.
I know you were talking earlier too about how one of your goals and one of your visions is to collaborate with the centers around the country
exactly.
on various human rights issues.
Absolutely.
So, are you partnering with anybody presently? Anybody in Cincinnati?
No, not currently, but we definitely are looking for our local partners. We're very interested in that, but we're also looking nationally and internationally. So we're going to be trying to work at those three levels and connecting those three levels: the local, the national, and the international.
I guess the idea is there's strength in numbers.
Absolutely. And we always need more. And we always need more. And so we want to make sure the folks look for us at University of Dayton, at Fitz Hall, room 665. That's the Human Rights Center, the Human Rights Studies Program at Political Science, and that folks know that they can come and get information about human rights issues. And in any way in which we can support the local efforts, we're committed to doing that.
So, do you ever have any forums and things like that at the center that people can take part in, the public can engage in?
We do. We've had a series of conferences, international conferences, with folks from all over the U.S. and beyond about the social practice of human rights, for example, that several professors have been engaged with. We have this work around slave labor and forced labor and human trafficking, where we're trying to build these connections. So we're trying to create those kinds of forums where these issues can be brought to bear. There's also every couple of years what's called the Romero Award, named for the Archbishop in El Salvador who was assassinated in 1980, who is now in the process of becoming a saint of the Catholic Church. And so that's an award that honors this kind of work nationally and internationally. Professor Mark Insalaco has been very involved in that.
Do you think the internet and social media have given advocates in the human rights arena a lot more power and ability than they had in the past?
Absolutely. I think media is so critical, and especially social media. Fortunately, we have a couple of staff members who are really experienced with that, because if you don't position these issues, if you don't make the invisible visible, to make the invisible visible, we can't even have a conversation, right? Because these issues then are just off the map. They're not even blips, at least, on the landscape. And so we're trying to transform the frames, the narratives around these issues, so the human rights are injected.
Yeah, and research and policymaking, Camilo, they're important steps, obviously necessary steps,
absolutely,
to improving human rights. What's the next step, though? How do you get beyond merely just discussing human rights and get into the area of strategies and taking action?
I think it's absolutely key. I think, for example, when you talk about issues like human trafficking, when you talk about issues like migrant children and their vulnerability, when you talk about the rights of women and girls, et cetera, against sexual violence and other forms of violence and other forms of discrimination, we need a lot of education combined with strategies to transform current conditions in a more positive direction, just as we've seen with police violence. I mean, the lessons of cases like Ferguson, of course, and Baltimore and so on. We need to learn a lot from that and transform that, not just have protest, which is very important, but also a process of transformation. And we're about that. We're about social transformation geared, centered around human rights.
So if someone wants to educate themselves about human rights issues, where would be the starting point?
Please join us at the center. Come see us at the Human Rights Center, again, Fitz Hall. And we'll be convening folks through media, through for events like the Social Practice of Human Rights, like the Romero Award, like the work of Abolition Ohio, etc. We'll be continuing with the Moral Courage Project in Ferguson and related work around these issues. We have another professor, Natalie Hudson, who's working on issues regarding gender and the UN. Gender and international law, but in the U.S. context as well. So we'll be continuing to engage those issues.
So in the years to come, Camilo, how will you measure if the Human Rights Center has been successful in its mission? What will you be looking for?
I'll give you an example. We have a research associate, a very distinguished former member of the UD research faculty named Binod Kumar, who coordinates a project around human rights and nonviolence. We want to position the issue of nonviolence in the U.S., learning from, of course, Dr. King, Gandhi, Mandela, etc., looking at the Black Lives Matter issue, looking at the issues that grow out of contexts like Orlando. What can nonviolence teach us and nonviolent traditions of research and advocacy? How can we bring those to Ohio and to UD? That's one example of building bridges, I guess.
We got an email from Nancy, and she wanted to know, does the center look at the rights of the disabled?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, for example, in the Sustainable Development Goals that I mentioned, the 17 goals that were adopted by the international community last September at the UN, there are specific issues as to the disabled because, among other things, the UN for the first time 6-7 years ago adopted an international convention on the rights of people with disabilities, which is sort of the international version of the laws we know about in the US. And so we're about enforcing and monitoring and ensuring education about those standards in the U.S.
Definitely. Camilo, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you so much, and to all of our listeners as well.
Camilo Perez Bustillo, he's Executive Director of the University of Dayton Human Rights Center. And coming up, we'll have a look at the development that's going on in Covington. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.